Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producers are Sean Cherry and Lou Pellegrino. Coming up on this week's Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable, Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated and Shad Finn of the Boston Globe. We have a discussion about LaVar Ball and whether reporters should continue to request interviews of LaVar Ball. Made a lot of news this week, and you saw the comments that Rick Carlisle made calling out ESPN for its latest story involving LaVar Ball and Luke Walton. We examine John Gruden leaving and how ESPN will cover John Gruden, whether they cover him hard or with kid gloves. And then we look into Katie Nolan's comments this week, calling out the president of the United States. She was not suspended for that, but admonished from ESPN, and we will discuss those comments as well. Those topics and more coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Okay, and we bring in Shad Finn of the Boston Globe, their sports media writer and columnist, and Jimmy Traina of SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com. He writes Traina Thoughts. Both have been on this podcast before. And welcome back, gentlemen, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks, Rich.
Jimmy, did you want to add anything to that, or should we just get going?
I'm just so speechless I got an invite, so...
It's exciting. All right.
Yeah.
So I want to start with LaVar Ball. We're taping this, I don't know if I'm going to guess you guys have seen this. Rick Carlisle came out with a very long statement about ESPN's let me make sure I sort of have this correctly. He is the president of the National Basketball Coaches Association, and he came out with a very long statement being critical of an ESPN story by Jeff Goodman that quotes LaVar Ball, where LaVar Ball is saying, I think I'm paraphrasing here, that Luke Walton should go, the players aren't playing for him, et cetera, et cetera. And Rick Carlisle is very upset about Jeff Goodman reporting the words of LaVar Ball. This gets into a larger topic, and I'll start with you, Chad, and that is where you stand on NBA reporters and sports reporters in general, sports broadcasters in general. I want to get into this discussion, but I want to start with this sort of general topic. Where do you stand with reporters interviewing LaVar Ball?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it's something that's generating news. His son is one of the better young players in this rookie class. He's had a bit of an up and down year, but it's a topic that I guess, unfortunately, people are reading and paying attention to, and so I can't really fault them for talking to him. It's a mutually beneficial relationship for sure, probably more so for him, but. I think ESPN is getting out of it what they want, and LaVar Ball certainly is with the attention he's seeking.
Jimmy?
I think it's pathetic, and I know why everyone does it. I know why we do it. We do it because of the page views and the clicks that it generates. So there's always going to be an interest in a circus and a shit show, so I get it. I know why everyone does it, but I cringe with embarrassment any time I see SI tweet about LaVar Ball.
Okay, and I think Jimmy's sort of taking a lot of the quote-unquote common fan take there, which is good. That's why I'm glad.
No, it's not. No, it's as someone who works at SI. Like, I think it's beneath us and embarrassing, and I think what ESPN did was pathetic.
Okay, so let me counter, Jimmy, and you both can go, because I'm going to be more with Chad on this. I absolutely think that LaVar Ball is fair game for any reporter who wants to talk to him. He is the father of a prominent NBA basketball player. He is newsworthy in that he is a central figure in that player's life and that player's development. He has his own company, which he is trying to, whether you like what his company is or not.
But those are not the reasons anyone interviews him.
Well, Jimmy.
They interview him because he gets page views, not because of anything you just said.
Listen, I'm not arguing with you. He absolutely is a page views turner, and people who say they don't want to hear from him continue to click on stories and continue
right.
to watch him. So while I think there's absolutely a lot of people who don't want to hear from him, I think there's a massive amount of people who do want to hear from. But Chad, to go to you, the idea, and no disrespect to Rick Carlisle, but the idea that any NBA coach can or should dictate who sports reporters talk to, and then even on top of that, the idea that an NBA coach would put out there that somehow media credentials for a team would be pulled if you talk to this guy is, I mean, the height of nonsense and, you know, sort of censorship gone bad. That's my one thing where I saw, I understand Carlisle's ticked off, and Carlisle could do a lot of things. They could agree not to talk to ESPN. They could agree not to get mic'd up. While I wouldn't like that, I would respect that. But the idea that you're pulling access in exchange for talking to this guy, it's the same thing when college sports departments try to bully the student newspaper. So Chad, to me, that was sort of the point where Carlisle lost me. I can respect the complaints, but sort of playing around on this idea of access being taken away because you don't like who the press talks to is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, and it's kind of fitting in one way for Carlisle, and that he's a control freak, pretty humorless publicly for the most part. I think he's a little bit different behind the scenes. But he's also kind of a common sense guy, so I was sort of surprised in that regard to hear it coming from him, because he's not somebody who – he does want to control everything, but he's not somebody who tends to go too far in that sort of way. I think what he's not saying here probably is that it's Luke Walton, and he's got a long relationship with him. I mean, he played with Walton's father on the Celtics in the 80s, and you look at victory parade photos of them, and all the Walton boys are right there with Carlisle and Bill Walton, and he's known him virtually his entire life. So I think he's sticking up Luke Walton a little bit and what he has to deal with LeVar Ball. But I think he's also genuinely pissed about it, and he wants something done, and maybe, you know, Carlisle's a bright guy. Maybe maybe if he throws this out there, something in between ends up being what happens, and maybe the ultimate result is a little bit less LeVar Ball coverage. But I think it's just the guy right now who likes to control everything, and he's really pissed about this situation.
And I should be clear, Sam Miko said several NBA coaches plan to ask media relations staff, so I don't want to per se say that Carlisle is directly the guy, but he's the head of the Coaches Association, so he would know about that. Jimmy, I'd be curious to, I understand where you're coming from, LeVar Ball. I think a lot of people share your opinion. Do you, as someone who works at a media place, though, take a little bit of offense with this idea that media relations staffers would revoke credentials of basketball writers who interview LeVar Ball? Because that is that kind of precedent then is like, okay, you're gonna revoke my credentials because I asked LeBron James a question you didn't like? Come on.
No, absolutely. I think it's a ridiculous step to take. And I mean, to be honest, I'm not even sure if I believe that story because it's so preposterous. Seems like an extreme step to take, so I'm not even sure I buy it. So, yeah, I mean, when revoking credentials for speaking to LeVar Ball is obviously ridiculous on many levels.
Here's the last thing I want to say. Jimmy, I'll go with you. But, you know, we did not hear this kind of I covered tennis when Richard Williams was at his sort of heights of talking to the press all the time and saying some crazy stuff. And while a lot of people in the press and the media would be like, you know, Richard Williams is saying this, he's bad for his girls, blah, 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 blah. Nobody ever said don't talk to him, which was interesting to me. They may have said he's crazy for saying he's going to buy, he's going to buy Rockefeller Center for $1 billion, whatever Richard once said. But nobody said stop interviewing the guy. So what's the difference here?
I think the difference is when you were speaking to Richard Williams or whoever was speaking to him, it didn't come off as strictly a pathetic, we need page views, we need clicks, play. Whereas every single thing with LeVar Ball does come off that way. There's nothing that seems, it's so blatantly obvious why he's covered. Richard Williams, I didn't think, was that kind of situation. And I also think there's a little bit of a difference when it's an individual, you're speaking to the father of the athlete in an individual sport, you don't see interviews with parents of players in team sports. I mean, it's a rare thing. I don't want to say you never see it. I mean, I know Brady's father has made headlines here and there.
Yeah, Gloria James has been interviewed. Del Curry's been interviewed. Mrs. Curry's been interviewed.
Yeah, but on a whole different scale. I mean, and again, if those players, you know, if Gloria James was a page views magnet, she'd get interviewed a lot more, but she isn't. So it's not, you know, people don't go to the well that, I mean, the bottom line is ESPN went to LeVar Ball for that interview because they knew people would click, not because they were interested in what LeVar Ball had to say.
Here's the one thing, Chad. Again, this is where I'm going to continue to sort of say I have no issues with reporters interviewing LeVar Ball. I consider him a absolute news subject and newsworthy. But if LeVar Ball, Chad, and I'm sure we are probably in agreement here since we sort of are cut from the same place. If LeVar Ball says that my son tells me that Luke Walton has lost the team, or LeVar Ball says something to the effect of Luke doesn't control the team anymore, they don't want to play for him, I don't know how you don't run that, given that it's one of the most prominent Los Angeles Lakers and the father of that player saying that the coach has lost the team.
You're going on the premise that LeVar Ball has credibility.
I'm going on the premise that I think if he says that, it's a story one should report out. Obviously,
right,
you talk to Lonzo, and obviously you talk to Luke Walton, but I don't think you dismiss it just because of the source. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chad. Go ahead.
Yeah, that would be the case with, I think, any parent anywhere in professional team sports where if Jason Tatum's mom came out and said, you know, my son's having a great rookie season, but Brad Stevens doesn't know how to use him. We would write about that. The thing with LeVar is the magnitude of this has gone way past any level that it ever should have. Jimmy's right about that. The problem is this specific instance is newsworthy because it affects Luke Walton, it affects the Lakers, it affects Magic Johnson, who drafted this kid whose father's already being a pain in the ass. What we shouldn't have talked about is the big brawler brand sneakers, or whatever he calls them, or any of the absurd stuff at UCLA with his son, who wasn't even the younger son's a prospect. The middle son really wasn't a prospect. Who cares that this kid was going to have no impact on Steve Alford's team? We way overdid it with all of that stuff. There are things that he said along the way that are just let them blow away and don't put a word online or print about it. This one is the rare one with him that is actually really relevant because it impacts one of the most compelling basketball teams in the NBA.
That's Chad, you make a great point. Jimmy, would you feel, I know you wouldn't like it, but do you think it'd be more honest if a place like Sports Illustrated or some other places came out and said something to the effect of, we're going to continue to run stories on LeVar Ball because his stories that involve him draw four times as much traffic as our NBA stories? Like, if people came out and were just totally transparent, would you respect that more, or you'd still feel the same way?
I mean, listen, it's still filthy to do it, but I don't need people to tell me that's why they're doing it. I know why they're doing it. I don't know if, you know, the general public gets it. I think they do. I don't think that's really a necessary step that has to be done. What I would like is every media outlet, like Chad said, to take a step back and, like, think about what you're publishing before you publish it. You want to say that his comments about Luke Walton are newsworthy? Okay, fine. You want to step back and make that decision? Okay, but like Chad said, 95% of the other stuff that we and other media outlets, ESPN, whoever it is, write or cover about LeVar Ball is complete bullshit.
It's interesting. One thing is it's not going to change, I don't think. I think they're going to continue to cover LeVar until Lonzo speaks up and says, I don't want you guys going to my father anymore. Just come to me for this. That's a lot of times that's usually what seems to happen, Chad, at least in my experience with covering the Williams sisters. Not that they ever outright said, don't talk to our father, but it just got to the point where, one, their winning basically became a much bigger story than Richard Williams' crazy stuff. And two, the women, you know, they became adults, so to speak, and they spoke for themselves, and you just didn't hear from the parents as much because they were the story, as opposed to the story as here are these, you know, here's Orsine and Richard Williams who produced these two great players. So I just wonder if, I don't know when it'll happen, but Lonzo Ball gets to be 24, 25 years old. I think the LeVar story fades on its own. Right now, it doesn't feel like it, but I think history tells me we're not going to be hearing for this guy for the next 10 years.
Well, there isn't much about him that's especially interesting to me, and I think a lot of people who are in this to cover and write about sports and the actual personalities involved in playing the games and covering the games and whatnot wish this would go away. But two things that I do wonder about that I want to see how they play out is how intelligent is this guy? I mean, is he making the right decisions for his kids, taking them overseas, pulling them out of college, the two younger boys? He's done a lot of things that have gotten brought him toward the goal he clearly wants, which is attention and cash and to be able to promote his kids and make a lot of money off it. So maybe he's got some sort of big plan here, but it kind of feels like he's just flying by the seat of his pants a lot of the time and running his mouth and seeing how it plays out. And the other thing sort of tied to that is Lonzo seems like a great kid. He really does. He's down to earth. He plays team basketball on a level that a lot of guys in the NBA, even point guards, don't play. By all accounts, he's well-liked among his younger Laker teammates and by the guys who were in the draft with him, spoke highly of him. He seems like a good kid. How is he like this when his dad is at least publicly 180 degrees from that? So I'm curious a little bit more about what that family is really like. But in terms of LeVar promoting his stuff and promoting himself and doing all these crazy things to get the camera lights on him, that can't go away fast enough.
Chad, I appreciate everything you say. The one thing I will just say is that Lonzo seems, as you said, like a very well-adjusted, has his head on his shoulders young guy. And I do think you got to give his parents, including LeVar, props for that. The kids seem to be, generally speaking, well-adjusted. Yeah, I know about the UCLA incident in China, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think it's clear that the parents have done a good job, certainly with raising Lonzo. So that should not be taken away. That said, there's no doubt that this guy is the helicopter parent of helicopter parents. And I think the stories are going to continue. Jimmy, did you want to add anything before we move on to John Gruden?
No.
All right. We are joined by, of course, Jimmy Train of Sports Illustrated and Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. And now we move on to our second topic, and that is John Gruden. John Gruden has taken the job with the Oakland Raiders, where he will be paid $740 million a year, I believe, over the course of his 10-year deal or something to that. Check my numbers on that, Chad. The point is, for this podcast purposes, I'm fascinated, Chad, by how ESPN will cover John Gruden now that John Gruden is no longer a employee of theirs. One of the things I wrote in this week's Monday column was I was always struck by just how starstruck ESPN executives and NFL personnel were by John Gruden. You know, I remember John Skipper always using the word star. If you talk to Jay Rothman, the producer of Monday Night Football, you know, he was talking to, he talked about Gruden the way like a film producer talks about, you know, Robert Redford and Paul Newman at the height of their career. It was crazy. They could not get enough of this guy. So it's interesting to me. I wonder, as an organization, can they be, I don't even know if objective is the right word, but critical of this guy as we head forward? You know, it's, I've always thought they've given a little more kid gloves treatment to those who used to work there, Urban Meyer and some others. And the same question, by the way, would go for Herm Edwards, who's now coaching college football. And Chad, what are your thoughts on that? Especially with Gruden, with the Raiders, big, big contract, and a team next year that's going to be expected to do something rather quickly.
Yeah, he's the ultimate cult of personality guy. I read what you wrote about that, and that was it completely jived with my experience when my futile attempts to get an interview with Gruden over the years. You look at like how CBS is with Cowher, and they all call him Coach on the air, and you know, play on his sideline history. But he's one of the guys. He's one of the well-respected people behind the scenes, and it's sort of all equal with the on-air personalities. Whereas with ESPN and Gruden, they all call him Coach because they think he's their coach. He had them eating out of his hand from day one there in terms of this big, broad personality that he displayed on the sideline, carried over to the air, and they looked at him like someone who is a star among stars there. And it was really strange to see, because there's going to be a dilemma here for them. You look back at his first go-round as a coach. He was with ESPN for 9 years, the last playoff game he won as a coach was that Super Bowl against the Raiders when he was with the Bucks, and after that they didn't win another one. People think he walked away to go to television. He got fired. He's got his little place down there for the Fired Coaches Association in the strip mall in Tampa where he watches all his film. He is someone who they are going to have to be critical of because his track record wasn't as great as his image when he was a coach the first time. Coming back after all this time, I really don't think it's going to go well, and ESPN is going to have to address that.
That you've made the great point. Again, I respect Gruden's football intellect, but the idea that he left the game as Lombardi is a little bit of hagiography. He won a Super Bowl for sure, but you are correct, Chad. I mean, he was fired in his last gig, and it's been a long time since this guy has had success as a coach, just given the fact that he's been out for 9 years. Jimmy, same sort of question. You know, you can make, I guess, the counter, Jimmy, that a Stephen A. Smith type or some others may make their bones on going after Gruden to sort of prove that they're, you know, not a quote-unquote company guy. But I think I'm more interested in just how the day-to-day stuff about the Raiders gets covered by ESPN on the sports centers, on ESPN.com, especially if it goes south for the Raiders right away. They do have talent, but, you know, it didn't go well for them this year, and you're essentially obviously going to bring back the same personnel.
Yeah, I think I would expect ESPN to treat Gruden with kid gloves. I don't think you're going to see any, big haymakers thrown at him if there's some trouble in Oakland. I think it's going to be the same thing with Aaron Boone with the Yankees. I just think...
Great point.
You know, they're... And I'm sure these are not the first two men to leave ESPN to go coach somewhere. I'm sure this has happened before. But I just think if you're part of a company for as long as they were, you're going to get cut some slack. I think it's only natural. But you may get there may be someone on one of their hot take shows who destroys them if, you know, there's a bad coaching decision or something like that. But overall, especially the NFL people, I think, the NFL has that really bizarre, fraternity thing. And they will definitely protect their own.
It's interesting. Jimmy brings up Aaron Boone, and I should have thought about that. I'm glad he did. I actually, if I had to guess, I think they'd actually be softer on Aaron Boone because you probably could get away with more in baseball because there's so much hyper-focus on football, particularly at ESPN. But that I'd be curious your take on that. You know, Aaron Boone obviously played for the Yankees for a while. You guys know him in Boston famously. But my sense is that he may even get – well, then again, he's the Yankees manager, and the Yankees manager always gets criticized. I don't know. I shouldn't even guess. Chad, what do you think off Jimmy's point? That was an interesting guy to bring up. I had forgotten about Aaron Boone.
The Yankees look like they're going to be terrific, and I think they probably will be, even with an inexperienced, to say the least, manager. We have the same thing up here with Alex Cora coming to the Red Sox. He spent time at ESPN before getting coaching with the Astros just last year, so... Both of those guys are former ESPN employees, both really, really well-regarded there. I think, at least in Boone's case, the team's going to be really good and will live up to that. And so there won't be much reason to criticize him. With Gruden, I think the thing is people look at him coming in as someone who's going to save this Raiders team that was really good 2 years ago, perceived as a team that should be coming into the season, might be playing this coming weekend, a Final Four team in the AFC. Didn't go right, Carr was beat up, all those things. And they think Gruden's going to turn that back around again. I don't think that happened. And I think there's going to be a real issues there with a coach having been away for so long, whose track record wasn't that good when he was there before. I mean, you can make the Joe Gibbs comparison coming back to the Redskins, but Joe Gibbs was a great coach.
Yeah.
Gruden, we don't have very little evidence other than his incredible personal charisma and ability to promote himself sort of almost casually that he's anything more than a slightly above average NFL coach. And I think it goes badly for him. And then people start looking at that salary, and ESPN's going to have no reason, no excuse for not criticizing him when that happens.
The other big difference between Boone and Gruden is that Boone's not making $100 million. So when that, when you have that attached to you, obviously the microscope is way more intense.
Jimmy, when you look at the ESPN roster right now, And if I could make you the in charge of studio and remote productions, is there anybody on the current ESPN talent roster right now that you think is a could step in and fill the Gruden spot and make that an effective presentation?
I was thinking about this over the weekend. I don't think they have an NFL guy. There might be someone in the college ranks, because I do think ESPN has a very deep college football roster that's good. But in terms of the NFL, I mean, one of the things, I mean, let me take an opportunity now to brag and make you eat some crow, Richard. Who was the one who said from day one Rex Ryan would be a bust on television?
That would be Jimmy Traina.
And can you remember one thing besides Rex saying he was not expecting what he got from Donald Trump? Besides him saying that, did he have one memorable moment on ESPN this year?
That would be his most memorable moment, that episode of Countdown.
So, I mean, Rex was an enormous bust for ESPN. And I think all the guys on their shows, whether it's, you know, Hasselbeck maybe Randy Moss, I saw some people say him, but, I mean, that really doesn't do anything for me. I just think they have a lot of cookie-cutter guys. I don't think it's an ESPN thing to do, but I would go try to, you know, outside, I guess maybe go try to get Peyton Manning. Maybe there's a player retiring. You know, CBS got lightning in a bottle with Romo. Maybe you go, you know, I mean, Carson Palmer just retired. I have no idea if he wants to get into broadcasting. If I'm ESPN, I'm looking for someone outside of Bristol.
Interesting. All right, I'll go to you, Chad. Jimmy mentioned a couple things there. Well, I wrote about this last week. The thing for ESPN now is there really is not a slam dunk, ready-made person to come in. If you decide to go internally, the likelihood is you're gonna have to change the constitution of one of your shows. So as Jimmy mentioned, if you go Randy Moss or Matt Hasselbeck, well then you got to change Countdown. When I talked to a lot of people in the business about Bruce Arians, they thought he had potential, but that the main job on an A job basically was going to be too much for him. Jimmy mentioned Peyton Manning. Very unlikely that he's going to jump for Monday Night Football, given that he could have had better jobs at CBS. Go ahead, Jim.
Here's one for Chad. Maybe when the Kraft-Belichick divorce happens, Belichick goes right into the booth.
Belichick said today that he's coaching the Patriots next year. Yeah. So we will hold off on that. So, Chad, sort of to get to you, I had some people after I wrote this piece give me some outside the box suggestions. Now, I don't think this is going to happen, but this speaks to where Jimmy is talking about with college football depth. Somebody mentioned that Todd Blackledge would be an interesting choice because he had a long career, or he's worked with McDonough, and that broadcast together was really, really good. Obviously, ESPN is very deep with Herb Street and some other college football analysts. So I don't honestly know where they're going right now, but I thought the Blackledge suggestion, if nothing else, was just kind of interesting in that it was a little outside the box and it made you think. And to Jimmy's point, Carson Palmer would definitely be kind of an A name. And I don't know what his interest in broadcasting is, but when I talked to Peter King about Carson Palmer, he had great things to say about Carson Palmer, just as somebody who was transparent and answered questions. So that was kind of interesting to me, too.
How about a bidding war with Fox for Jay Cutler when he retires again? Probably no. I've seen Palmer a little bit covering the NFL, and he's even keeled. When you'd have Romo in a press conference, on the very rare occasions, you know, he played against the Patriots, so you'd see him on the game you were watching for a Patriots behalf. He was the way he is on TV, very personable, and got in a good one-liner here and there, and you can see the makings of what he is as a broadcaster. I don't know that Carson Palmer has that in him. I like the ideas about the college football guys coming over. Blackledge is terrific. McDonough also has a history with Chris Spielman, who's really well-regarded.
Yep.
He's a good NFL player in his own right, although probably out of the minds at this point of a lot of younger fans. But he was a terrific linebacker. Other than that, though, you look at the ESPN roster, and the guys you see are – They're better analysts, and in the case of the guy I really like, Louis Riddick, who I think is one of the best things about ESPN, his name pops up in general manager openings all the time. So how long is he going to be there? Are they going to be if they even theoretically slid him into this role, how long would he be doing it? Would he be breaking a contract like Gruden did? So I don't think they have an in-house option. I think they're going to have to get creative with this, not Dennis Miller-level creative or anything like that, but go out and find somebody that has a personality and some name recognition, because that seems to be a priority, understandably, in that role. I don't know who it is, and I don't think they do either.
So yeah, Chad, I agree with you on that. I think Louis Riddick is the best NFL analyst that ESPN has, and I think he's the best by a lot. I selfishly would not want him on Monday Night Football, because I think it would limit him to game only analysis, and it would take something away from him in the studio. That said, if you're Louis Riddick and they make that offer to you, you have to take it. That's millions and millions of dollars raised for you, and it's their highest profile platform. I'm just being selfish that I hope that doesn't happen. Jimmy, one last thing here. If they do end up going to the Hasselbeck, Randy Moss kind of route, I think you're someone who's always been, you were a big Chris Berman and Tom Jackson fan, and I would think that, and you certainly, obviously you mentioned Rex this year not being impactful. Do you think that show needs to retool again? The show had some significant ratings challenges this year. It was down again. And if you do, you know, I guess maybe if you think that you could do like a Moss and a Hasselbeck or a Moss solo, it does give you the opportunity to try to reshape that show, which at least in terms of a viewership play did not succeed this year.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a larger discussion here just in general about NFL pregame shows and where they stand in this day and age in terms of who's watching them. Do people need them? Do people want to watch them? You know, Fox is usually always the number one rated pregame show, and I think that's just because that team has been together forever and it's familiar. I know that's, you know, my go-to if I'm home in between 12 and 1 and the television is on. You know, the ESPN show, I mean, what's the reason to watch it? Who's the person you're watching it for? What's driving you to that show? I mean, I don't, you know, in this day and age where everything is niche, where you have people watching fantasy shows, people listening to podcasts in that hour, everyone's siphoned off now. So what brings you to ESPN? I mean, there's no one on that show that's bringing me to that show. You know, I like the band. Those Fox guys have been together, like I said. I mean, CBS, I feel the same way about CBS as ESPN. I mean, who's bringing me to that show? So you could always add people in and mix it up. I'm not sure anymore if there's anyone that could be a difference maker on an NFL pregame show. I honestly don't think that even exists unless, you know, you get someone really, you know, like a Peyton Manning type.
That's interesting. I mean, I think those are all fair points. I think ESPN far and away has the best feature producers of all the NFL shows. So that whenever they do one of those long features, I actually think they do a great job. But I agree with you.
Here's the thing, though, about that. Those features end up online.
True.
You know what I mean?
Right. You can find them. I think to answer your question, I think ESPN would say Randy Moss, but I don't think Randy Moss is destination enough viewing. So it gets to what you're saying is you generally, and by the way, all these shows essentially decline, I think, except for the NFL Network's morning one. But Chad, to go to Jimmy's point, I think you still go to these shows because you like the chemistry of the group, right? More than an individual. That would be my take, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Moss was supposed to be that guy. I mean, they plucked him away from Fox Sports and the second NFL morning show that they had, because he created such a buzz when they put him on that they took him away, kind of like they're apparently trying to do with A-Rod in baseball right now. And I thought they were going to build this pregame show around Moss, but I think what they found and what we would find out for sure if they put him on Monday nights is that he needs a couple of strong personalities around him that can play off him. I think Charles Woodson does it pretty well, but if you put Moss on Monday night with McDonough, you're going to have periods where Moss doesn't say anything. He's not the most polished broadcaster at this point, which was part of his appeal. He just sort of said what he thought and said it in an interesting way. I don't know how that goes over the 4-hour, 3.5-hour Monday night audience where he's supposed to be commenting in real time on what he just saw in front of him. I think he's better in the studio role and in a smaller dose than you would get on Monday night. So I don't know if he's the best personality they have on that show, but I don't think it translates to Mondays.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's amazing how many people they have working that Sunday-Monday night connection, but yet there's something sort of off. Although I think, you know, this is no disrespect to Sam Ponder. I always thought Susie Colbert should have been the Berman successor. I've always thought she I mean, you could obviously put Trey Wingo there too, but I think Colbert's very good in that role. That said, no host is coming in and game-changing the viewership, whether it's Sam Ponder, Susie Colbert, you know, Mike Greenberg, or Chad Finn. The numbers were either going up or down based on many different variables, including chemistry and including the NFL season. Jimmy, is there anything you want to add before we leave the NFL or the Monday Night Football John Gruden ESPN topic?
I don't believe so. I was trying, you know, the one thing, just going back to names for the Monday Night Football job. I know Kurt Warner did a couple of games for NBC this year, filling in.
Him.
I don't know if he's a cat. I guess he's at NFL Network. NFL Network, I should say. They, you know, I like Eisen. I think their pregame show does a decent job. That's a place I would go to before I'd go to ESPN even too. So, I said, I don't know what the answer is for the ESPN pregame show. I just want to brag again that everyone thought Rex was going to be a game changer, and he's been terrible.
Yeah, I don't remember me saying he was going to be a game changer, but I do agree that you were.
I'll go find the quote.
Find that quote. I'm not sure. That's a tape I'm not sure you're going to find.
No, I think you wrote it. I'll find it.
Yeah, find it. See if you can find it. But Kurt Warner is somebody a couple of high-level broadcast executives told me to watch. I don't know what his contract situation is, but keep in mind, Kurt Warner has done the Westwood One Monday Night Football radio games. So he's got a lot of reps in terms of calling games. I think he'd be good, actually. But again, he may be under contract for a long time for the NFL Network, so I don't know if he's available to ESPN. One last thing for both of you guys. I should have mentioned this. Chad, I know you're a homer here, so I know what you're going to say. So I'm going to start with Jimmy. Jimmy, you see any possibility they would blow up the whole booth and change McDonough as well as the analyst?
Yeah, I mean, I could see them doing that. I don't know. Again, I mean, who's the person you're going to put in that role?
Don't know.
And are they going to make a difference in terms of viewership? I mean, the problem ESPN has is the games are usually mediocre, and by Monday night, you know, with the addition of the Thursday night game, people are spent on football. So I'm not sure the broadcast booth has an impact like it used to. I mean, the days of, you know, now I'm going to sound old here, but, you know, Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford and the guy singing, you know, Goodnight the Lights and all that. And those days are over.
Turn out the lights.
Yeah, it's whatever it is. And they were basically boozing it up on the air. But, you know, who's going to be the game changer for a play-by-play, you know, gig on Monday Night Football? I'm not sure booting McDonough serves any purpose.
I agree with you. And, Chad, to this point, you ripped up McDonough's old contract and you paid him a lot more to do Monday Night Football. So if you were going to blow up the booth, you'd have to pay somebody. You know what I mean? They're in a cost-cutting mode. And so the cost-cutting play is to keep McDonough there because you don't have to, in theory, you don't have to add any dollars, given that you're probably going to add dollars for whoever bring in as an analyst.
Yeah, it makes sense to do in that regard. I think they're generally pretty happy with the way things went this year. I know occasionally it came across on the air that there was some iciness between McDonough and Gruden, but that certainly didn't seem that way in the last game the other day. And I think there's a lot of respect within ESPN for not just McDonough's versatility, but his ability to call football in particular, as well as the other stuff that he does. So I think he'll be back. It's a matter of finding someone who can play off him and who has sort of a matching sense of humor. You know, we all looked at Gruden as kind of goofy, but he wasn't really genuinely self-deprecating ever. He would make a joke about himself, but sort of just move on from it after that. I think if you have somebody in there who can sort of be on McDonough's level of sarcasm and biting wit when the moment calls for it, that it will be a much more, or at least a little bit more appealing broadcast than it was this season.
Yeah, I actually think McDonough and Gruden liked each other personally. I think just chemistry on air wasn't great. But I everything I heard, they got along. And I will say this about Gruden. He had a very good reputation for being a good guy with the crew. Not just the top personnel in the crew, but the behind-the-scenes people. And so that's, you know, that's awesome. And that does say something about the guy. It just got a little bit too much when you'd hear from public relations people to producers to the president about, you know, John Gruden's about to, he's about to walk into a delicatessen and nobody orders a sandwich like John Gruden. You know, it was a little, at a certain point,
it got to be
a little too much. Let's like relax. All right, moving on. We're going to go to start with you, Chad, because this person is from your neck of the woods, and that is Katie Nolan. Katie Nolan in the news last week going on the DeSouce and Mero show. I hope I'm pronouncing that right on Vice. Produced by Eric Reinholm, by the way, who is the producer of Pardon the Interruption, or the executive producer of Around the Horn, and the most powerful producer at ESPN. If you are under the Reinholm auspices, which the new Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre show will be, you are basically... Your star is set at ESPN. That is the guy more than anybody else, maybe with the exception back then of John Skipper. That's the guy you want believing in your talent. So
this is one of those vintage 10-minute Deitch questions.
Yeah, I know. This is a terrible. I admittedly rambled into this question.
Katie Nolan, get to Katie Nolan.
I apologize for all the to all 16 listeners. So Katie Nolan comes on and says, Jimmy, if I'm misquoting this. She calls Trump a fucking stupid person. It's bleeped, but that's pretty clear what the language says. It's also
It wasn't beeped, I don't think.
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing. It was also a kind of an odd cut in the production in that it also looked like Katie Nolan used the word retard as well. You guys can sort of confirm that or not. The point is, she says something that's inflammatory about the president of the United States. We have gone down this road before, obviously, with Jemele Hill, and ESPN makes the determination or decision. They give one of their statements that they have often given, you know, we've addressed the situation with Katie Nolan, she knows it's wrong, and that's our comment on this. Chad, how did you view all this with the interesting context that Katie Nolan is still a very, very new employee at ESPN?
Well, it would be hard to tell if she was suspended because it's hard to find her. I have no sense for what their long-term plan is with her, other than that they were happy to pluck her away finally from Fox and from her other gigs. But she's sharp. We all know that, and I think she this wasn't dipping a toe in the water. This was jumping in with both feet in terms of seeing what you can get away with their social media policy that was recently enacted, or I guess their general media policy, which was recently enacted. I haven't heard anything in terms of internal backlash about this. And if I were somebody there who had been punished for saying similar things, I'd be wondering what the difference is. But Katie is just she's so difficult to figure out what their plan is with her that it's hard to figure out what their punishment would be if something happened. It's almost like they just took her away and put her on the back burner. You see her doing those countdown things, like I think it was during Thanksgiving maybe, where it was like the top 10 highlight plays, and just a complete misuse of someone that they looked at like was going to be some sort of major asset for them. So we'll see if that changes with some of the programming changes coming up. But I feel like if she was going to be in trouble for this, we would have heard about it by now.
Jimmy, a couple things for you here. Chad, by the way, I did hear from some ESPNers, including one who texted me, WTF do you have to do to get suspended
right.
at ESPN? So there were people who sort of were paying attention to it. Jimmy, I want to make the caveat that you are friends with Katie. So
wait, hold on. Wait, well, you're saying people at ESPN texted you that about
yes,
what?
About not being suspended and basically once again being the larger point being that, like, we just went through this entire exercise where we come out with a social media policy, we say don't politicize stuff, we say don't get political, high-profile person comes out, and it's a slap on the wrist. Okay, Jimmy, I know you disagree with it. I'm just sort of pointing it out for point of fact. Hold on.
But wait, can I just address what you just said? Because you've said this before, and you're 100% right on it. Again, with this whole, the politicizing. She's on a show that's about politics. She wasn't on, like you've said this before. It's not like, you know, Carl Ravitch is breaking down Trump's tax plan on ESPN.
Right.
I mean, there, can we use some goddamn context in what is going on? She's on a show that covers politics. She didn't say this on ESPN.
Right. Well, this is where ESPN management, I think, would agree with you, and they're saying we're making this individual decision. I have continued.
Don't let her on the show. Don't let her on that show. Then that's where they made the mistake.
Fair point. Listen, as I have said, from Schilling to Jamel Hill, and I will say to Katie Nolan, none of these people should be suspended for that comment. You're paying them to be opinionists. I realize there are a million people who disagree. If you say something that, you know, it pisses you off your employer, you should be suspended, blah, blah, blah. Traditionally, and Chad will agree with me here, ESPN, generally speaking, only suspends you when you fuck with their money. When you are saying something that Jamel Hill, again, I will continue to remind people, was not suspended for the Trump comments. She was suspended when she suggested
boycott Jerry Jones.
Correct. Suggested how one could impact the NFL sponsors. So never forget that. Simmons was suspended when he called the commissioner
Goodell a liar.
Yeah, a liar, which is screwing with their most important property, the NFL. So Chad, or Jimmy, I'm sorry. My thought here was that, and tell me, you know, feel free to say I'm an idiot or tell me I'm wrong here, but my thought would have
been. You're an
idiot. All right, there you go. My thought would have been thank you, John. My thought would have been to be proactive if you were Katie Nolan to come out right after that thing airs. And by the way, it's kind of interesting that they aired it because they could have cut the whole segment and we never would have learned about this. But the thing airs, if you're Katie Nolan, why not just come out and not necessarily apologize for criticizing Trump, but maybe use the choice of word. Which seems very clear. The word retard is not a word I think one should be throwing around, certainly in 2017. Or maybe just come out and say, hey, I express my views, like you're saying, Jimmy, on a show that has nothing to do with sports, that has nothing to do with my ESPN gig. And so I stand by my comments, but if people, if people thought I went over the line, you know, hey, sorry. I don't know. I wonder if she should have been proactive in putting out there some context as to what she was thinking. Or do you think in this case, because ESPN management is probably saying we want to get this behind us, you don't talk about it, and you hope the news cycle goes away.
I absolutely don't think she should have apologized. Again, if ESPN gave her permission to go on that show, then this is on ESPN. Don't let her do media if you're going to be worried about her saying things like that. And I think for her to issue an apology this is ultimately what the issue is, okay? Donald Trump is a fucking stupid person, but people don't want you to say it. ESPN doesn't want people to say it. Well, if you don't want people to say it, don't let them do other shows where there's a chance they could say it, and Trump is the topic. Keep them off shows where Trump is the topic.
Chad, will Jimmy get suspended by ESPN for what he just said on this podcast?
He might get suspended by you. I don't think he's.
No, he's fine. He's okay. You're allowed to say that on this podcast.
Everyone should just come out and say, listen, we know this is the case. We just don't want our employees saying it. But no, they start with, you know, and we've talked to her, and just say, listen.
Well, they don't want to.
Go ahead, Chad.
I don't want to feed that narrative that's out there about them being liberal, you know, being liberal about everything.
This is what the problem is. Thinking Donald Trump is a stupid fucking person has nothing to do with being liberal. It has to do with having common sense and seeing what's right in front of your face.
I agree with you, but half the country doesn't.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who would take offense to that, Jimmy, both on the content of what you're saying as well as how you are saying
it. Well, the people who would take offense to that already don't like Katie Nolan.
Well, that's an interesting comment. Okay. Well, Jimmy, I am with you on the fact that ESPN continues to try to be everything for everybody, and that's ultimately a losing battle. And you can't let people who are criticizing your every single move dictate what you do. So I'm just bringing these questions out. I'll continue to say this as I was Katie, I necessarily would not apologize for my content on Trump. I may have apologized for that singular use of one word that they believed, but if you read her lips, it seems pretty clear.
She also stopped herself from saying it.
She did. I agree.
Caught herself.
Right, and listen, live television is hard as hell, and we all fuck up. I fuck up on this podcast often, and this is taped, and I can retape it. So I'm with you on that. But there will no doubt be people who will, I think, continue to and well-minded people who work at ESPN who will say that, you know, we've set these guidelines up. We're not supposed to politicize stuff anymore. We're not supposed to insult and attack people. And then even though it wasn't on our airwaves, this happens, and there's no discipline other than a statement.
The people at ESPN are saying that are not really that intelligent then, because here's the thing. So, you expect certain behaviors from certain personalities. Okay, if Bob Lee went on TV and said Donald Trump's a fucking stupid person, everyone would be shocked.
Right, that would be shocked.
And taken aback. Katie Nolan does it, and it's not even a blip on the radar, except for people who want to make a big deal about it because they love Trump or whatever. But so that's what I'm saying. There needs to be some context behind these things. What Jamel did, but like saying Donald Trump's a white supremacist on his Twitter, that was, again, in the context for her to say that, not a big deal. But it became a big deal. It's ESPN reacting to the people who want to make it a big deal when ultimately it's not a big deal.
All right, Chad, is there anything you want to add on this before we I think we can end on college football as we're getting out. You know what? Actually, one last thing, Jimmy, because Chad brought up a really good point. It seems clear that they're going to try to make Katie Nolan one of their faces of Snapchat. But it's, you know, you have to obviously get her some reps elsewhere. And so I would continue to not be surprised that we'll see her on the Around the Horns, the highly questionable, the maybe the new Greenberg show. You think that's the plan? That's what it seems to me to be.
I mean, I have no idea what the plan is. I hope they use her on more stuff other than Snapchat, because I'm too old to use Snapchat. So hopefully they put her on television and make good use of her. I mean, I know when they hired her, I think in the release, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they say they hired her for digital? So
yeah, because you got to go. One of the reasons she was doing this show is she's promoting a podcast, and so
right.
Which I think will do well, and that will be a really good forum for her to.
So how long? Let's cut right to the chase.
Sure.
How long after her podcast launches will she be in trouble?
I'll
go 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think there's not. I think I would agree with you, Jimmy and Chad. I wonder if you would agree. There will be something on that podcast that could potentially be problematic. Although, and here's the key, the podcast probably gets edited, and probably some management types hear it, so they could always cut it out before it airs.
I'm going to take the under anyway.
Okay. All right.
Well, why didn't they cut out Bill Simmons saying that Roger Goodell was a liar?
I think if I remember correctly, correct me, guys, if I'm wrong, but Grantland was its own little silo, and those podcasts probably never, ever went through the traditional ESPN editing process. That Grantland was its own, independent island,
right,
basically.
Right, right.
So that would be my guess. And I still wonder, in hindsight today, I wonder if that still would – if he said that today in 2017 – I'm not sure he gets suspended, just given where we are in the country and everything else. Just my guess, but I don't know.
I think you're right.
It seems quaint now.
It seems quaint now. Exactly. All right. When you listen to this, this game will have been played, and that is Alabama, Georgia. And the only thing I want to ask you guys as we're getting out of here is my instinct in the lead up to this has been that the buzz for this game is the least buzz we've had since they went to the playoff format. And I would think that this game is going to draw under 25 million, and it's going to be it's going to take a ratings hit, especially if it's not a competitive game. When you listen to this, you will know by then the result of the game, and you will know probably, if you're into this stuff, how many people watch the game. But we're taping this hours before the game. So, Chad, what's your instinct on this? I tweeted out, I wasn't sure if I was being a prisoner of the Northeast, but it struck me that the lead up for this particular championship game, whether it's SEC fatigue or Alabama fatigue or something else, it's just as low as it's ever been. But I didn't want to get trapped in that's a guy from New York saying that.
No, I'm taking the under with that one too. I thought it was interesting that about a week ago now they had ESPN PR had Fowler and Herb Street on a conference call, and Fowler was pretty candid about it. He acknowledged that there's significant concern among management and on the business side that this game is going to underwhelm in terms of what their ratings expectations might have been with a different matchup. He essentially said that we him and Kirk can't think about this because they just have to call the game, but it is a real thing within ESPN that there's worry. So when that's being acknowledged up front by some of the primary talent at the network, you know it's a real issue behind the scenes and something they're really concerned about. And I think we'll know before this podcast is out maybe how it ultimately goes. But I think you're right that there's not going to be a lot of suspense by the time the second half comes around, and that's really going to put a lot of a major dent into even maybe their lowered expectations for what the ratings and viewership will be.
Jimmy?
Listen, this is my standard line with everything. You expect the rating to be down. People, the cord cutting that is going on affects everything. And this will be no different. I have friends who this weekend cut the cord. It's a real thing, and you're never going to be able to match what you did the year before because of it. And I also think that, if you get a close game, if you have a game that's, within a touchdown in the fourth quarter, that's going to help you tremendously. You don't, and you're doomed.
We did see, Chad, I think it has come out as we are taping this podcast, that the NFL ratings for Wild Card Weekend, they're all down from last year. The numbers...
And down big.
Down big. The numbers themselves are good, obviously. Eventually when the numbers come out, 20-something million, but they're all down pretty big. Which, again, if you're the NFL, has to concern you. I'm more interested in this coming week and the championship round. That will tell me a lot more than the wild card round. And I think, I guess we can end it on this, Jimmy, some of the teams that are playing this week are not big national draw teams. Jacksonville, we're not getting the Packers, the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Patriots. And so they really, I think, more than anything, need some great games this week because they do have some teams there that are just not your traditional national draws.
Well, the biggest problem they're going to have, there's no chance the Titans are going to beat the Patriots, so forget that. But if Jacksonville ever beat Pittsburgh and CBS ended up with Jacksonville, New England instead of New England, Pittsburgh, you're talking killer. Significant rating point
Agreed.
Drop.
Agreed. Chad, you agree with that? For sure.
I do agree with that. I'd almost like to see that just to see how much of a drop it is. The word Jimmy was using on another topic earlier was context. We're all the three of us and people in this business are at the point where we know the ratings are going to be down for whatever football, whatever football weekend or game or event that we're talking about. They're going to be down year over year. It seems like the public is still at the point for where this is a surprise. And I'm curious when we get to when do we get to the point where everyone is expecting this? It's still, look how much ratings are down. Well, yeah, they are, and this isn't going to stop for a while. What we're all waiting to see now, what we should be waiting to see, is what that floor is, where it all evens out. You look at the national ratings this year, and I think it was 27 of the top 50 TV shows in the fall were football games. So they're still extraordinary compared to most anything else, but they're diving and diving and diving in terms of their own expectations and promises to advertisers. And that, to me, is the thing that I'm fascinated to see how it ultimately plays out, but it's going to be over years rather than something that stops anytime soon.
Yeah, 37 of 50, just to correct Chad really quick there.
And, that was.
I don't know who mentioned this to me. I don't know if it was O'Rand or somebody else, but like we were discussing the idea of where the Super Bowl would be, and if the Super Bowl is still immune to all this, or if we could ever get to the point where we see the Super Bowl rating like 102 million as opposed to 111 million or something like that. That would stun me, but I got to keep my mind open to that possibility now, especially as Jimmy says, if somehow like a Jacksonville type or something like that, floats through. Even the Eagles, as great a team as they've been this year, without Wentz, that's a tougher national, game to sort of market. So it's an interesting time for the NFL.
I think that the Super Bowl is the one game that is immune to it. I think they'll have a little bit of a drop. I'm talking about maybe one or two rating points. I don't think you're going to see a drop because it's a holiday now. It's not really a game. It's a holiday in this country. So that's why I think they're immune to it. And plus, those viewership. Whatever the number of viewership is, it's not even close to accurate because everyone watches it in bunches anyway.
Correct. Yeah. You'll never, but that's almost all true for always sort of big sporting events is you never really get a perfect.
Well, people don't get together to watch game 7 of the World Series. They get together to watch the Super Bowl. There is a big, the football does stay,
I think, but,
maybe the NCAA tournament, everyone watches it in bars,
but Jimmy, you'd agree. Certainly in the South tonight, there'll be a ton of people watching it, watch parties tonight for college
football.
Right,
in the South, but in the Super Bowl, it's the entire country.
I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Jimmy. The only thing I've learned from this podcast is that you were correct on Rex Ryan. So congratulations. You get a prize.
You said I was right about something else, or you said I brought up, Aaron Boone. You gave me credit for that,
yeah,
Richard.
You added a lot to this podcast. I appreciate it. All right, Chad Finn is the sports media writer for the Boston Globe, as well as a columnist there. Jimmy Traina is a writer for SI.com and has Traina thoughts every day on our website. Chad and Jimmy, thank you very much. This is the second roundtable of 2018. You will be part of the rotation, and you will be back. And Chad, back-to-back weeks. I mean, I'm riding you like LeBron, basically, in the conference finals. So I appreciate that very much. Thank you both.
I'll physically break down. He never will.
LeBron will not.
Yes, Chad doesn't get, you know, snubbed for weeks in a row for making a snide remark in the office like I do. I have to, you know, it's easier for him to get on consecutive weeks. I see you in the office, say something, you know, snarky, and then you ban me for like a month. So
I'm like Belichick, Jimmy. I never forget, basically. Hopefully Seth Wickersham can get to the bottom of the contention between both of us.
You've right. never given me the Patriot, the SI Employee of the Week, and, you know.
Yeah, the Patriot of the Week. Yeah. .com of the Week. All right, yeah. Jimmy Traina, Chad Finn, thank you very much. We will see you again very soon.
Bye, Richard. Bye, Chad.
All right, my thanks to Jimmy Traina and Chad Finn for joining us on the podcast. Last week's shows, please check them out if you haven't. An hour-long interview with Jemele Hill that I think you will appreciate and learn some things from. And Chad and John Orand were the guests on the first podcast of the year, and we went pretty deep in John Skipper and some of our skepticism around that. If you like this, please this kind of content, please go to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. Sign up, leave a review, and thank you for the support. For producer Lou Pellegrino, for producer Sean Cherry, for Cadence 13, for Sports Illustrated, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.